Well, hello, Journey to Midwifery fans. It's been a minute, and now I'm back up and running and scheduling podcast interviews. The episodes will be a bit intermittent because life, but I'll do my best to get them out to you whenever I can. This week's podcast episode is with Angela Luciano, a longtime practicing certified nurse midwife who is now enjoying her retirement. She shares her journey to midwifery with all of the joys and struggles along the way. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. Welcome to the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This podcast platform is for midwives to tell their story. This is where you get to hear the how and the why a person is called on this journey to midwifery. I'm your host, Amber Wilson, a midwife myself, and I came up with this idea so that all those people asking these questions had a place to go to find answers. I hope you enjoy these stories as much as I enjoy recording them. Okay, Angela, thanks for joining me on this podcast. Finally, we had some reschedules, but we're here now to share your long journey to midwifery, right?
Yes, thank you for having me.
I'm excited. So we'll just start right from the beginning, right? What? Tell me why you decided to become a midwife 40 years ago.
Right. The journey began in 1980. I was 21. I was working at a health food store, stocking shelves. And I know this is a cliche moment, but I came across the 1970s, the counterculture feminist birthing reads. And it was spiritual midwifery, immaculate deception, Laborier's birth without violence, Raven Lang's birth book, witches, midwives, nurses, bodies ourselves. And I was inspired. My soon-to-be husband and I were renovating an old house when we met our new neighbor, Betsy. She was a Rutgers University sociology professor. And Betsy had a big organic garden, a big belly, and was planning a home birth and would be breastfeeding baby Ella. And Ella is 40 now. I was interested in every bit of that. I poured through all the books and asked to meet up with Betsy's midwives, Alice and Janet. They were both labor and delivery nurses with 25 years experience, and they birthed babies at home. After much cajoling on my part, definitely not theirs, they took me on as a very green apprentice for the next 2 years. And we attended about 5 births a month or so. Since I had no experience other than being a baby lover, they required me to have EMT training and teach emergency childbirth to EMTs, paramedics, firefighters, and police officers. We also had a weekly study group with a British trained midwife, and we worked through Miles Midwifery, Oxnard and Foote, and Williams Obstetrics. At that time in New Jersey, home birth was practicing medicine without a license for direct entry empirically trained midwives. The only legal providers were CNMs and MDs. We had supportive OBs for backup and one family practice MD that we occasionally attended births with. We also had peds for well newborn home visits. For the next couple of years, I attended home births with a partner, Leica, who had been trained with Sherry Daniels at the Maternity Center in El Paso, Texas. We birthed babies in every type of living arrangement, houses, backyard, gardens, teepees, motorhomes, ashrams, religious and intentional communities. Even had a few families deliver at my home due to their situation or their distance from the hospital. I also worked as a birth assistant for 2 out-of-hospital birth centers, Family Born and With Loving Care, and served as a doula for high-risk moms who birthed in the hospital. And this was when answering machines were dodgy at best. And initially, even before we had pagers with lousy service, way before cell phones in the dark ages of communication, being on call for 24/7 for 7 years was a struggle. But by then my sons, Jeremy and Jordan, had been born, and I was fortunate to experience the tranquility of home birth from the mom's perspective. the midwives that I had trained with delivered our babies, and their watchful eye was a trusted cloak that surrounded us. It was inspiring to birth my babies and know that the onus for the safety and guidance belonged to my midwives. And they kept me informed so I could make the best decisions.
Sounds like a midwife. So why you chose the path of CNM? Why did you choose that path?
Right. It was not a specific birth or an epiphanous moment, but it was an overall awareness after many births. And it wasn't nebulous about choosing the CNM path. I had many reasons. I was grateful to have learned so much so serenely as an empirically trained midwife, but there were far too many educational and experience gaps. With an intended low-risk population and no unnecessary meddling, most births go beautifully. But how competent and proficient was I if I rarely saw complications for the mom and the baby, or even the wide range of very normal variations? Trust in Allah, but tether your camel was an inspiring phrase. It wasn't sufficient for me to read about it and then be responsible. I wanted prevention, assessment, diagnosis, management, and when to wait watchfully to be at the tips of my fingers. And I knew the home wasn't a safe place to learn those essential skills. I wanted to be trained by experts to increase my competence so I could be the trusting balance and keep birth safe and pass that correct knowledge down for the next generation. I was also disheartened with the lack of diversity in the home birth population we were serving as empirically trained midwives, myself as a mother included. Our client base was privileged, mostly white, college educated, and financially able to afford cash, often paying for their health insurance and having a new baby as well. Women of color, low income, and immigrant populations may have desired a home birth and been good candidates, but there was a huge disparity, there was rare equality, and from a humanitarian perspective, that still has not changed enough. The midwife can only offer so many pro bono and sliding scale births and still put gas in your Volvo to attend the next delivery. And I wanted to give midwifery care to every woman, not just low risk. Women's health doesn't fit all into one box. It changes and it may need a coordinated safety net. My goals were to provide services covered by insurance, Medicaid, and Medicare for the continuum of care throughout the lifespan, not just the childbearing season, to network community resources for coordinated, holistic, and not fragmented care, and to provide compassionate transfer resources for the out-of-hospital community. The social justice aspect of midwifery is so valuable for healthcare egalitarianism and reducing disparities by supporting multicultural and indigenous ethnicities with varied economic backgrounds. And I wanted to be a part of increasing access to care for marginalized, discriminated populations and those who couldn't pay for medical services, those that were on public assistance, and to be able to advocate for girls and women's opportunities and speak up for those that couldn't speak up for themselves. You know, I really felt that love all, serve all is the cornerstone of midwifery care. I wanted to share the power of midwifery and impact society with each amazing birth story that the parents tell. Those that have not sought out midwifery care may know little about midwives until they come into the hospital. The midwife is on call and they had a great birth experience, and that ripple spreads. I wanted to be an example to the unnecessarily interventionalist medical system and teach students of different disciplines the art of listening and trusting the birthing person and how to have patience with the birth process. I also wanted to be a community resource to offer shadowing and speak at high schools, colleges, and girls and women's groups about midwifery as a healthcare option, as well as a career. As an independent healthcare provider, I wanted flexibility for practice with globally respected credentials. And I also wanted to contribute to outstanding statistics, demonstrate cost-effective care, and promote midwifery research.
I want to say I really enjoyed that. That was very in-depth, your reason why, and I appreciate you sharing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
So prior to becoming a midwife, what did you do?
Right. My family moved to North Carolina in 1988, and I went to nursing school at 30 just to go to midwifery school. I think you've heard that before. While in ABN school, I worked as a birth assistant at CNA for Maureen Darcy. She's a true luminary and fierce advocate for midwifery care in the first North Carolina hospital-affiliated birth center, was the Chatham Family Hospital Birth Center in Siler City. And I needed that positive birth fix to get through the challenges of nursing school. After becoming an RN, I worked on labor and delivery at a level 2 community hospital for 10 years while getting a BSN and CNM. It's been 20 years now since I was an RN. It was pre-epidural time, IV pain medicines only, and sympathetic creative labor support was the strategy. We had no in-house OBs or CNMs even, or even an OR crew after 5. On-call was the typical paradigm for the providers. Hence, there were lots of missed deliveries and lots of the nurses handling complications, incredible learning experiences, iatrogenic and spontaneous. Even though I would not have thought I'd work as a nurse for 10 years, it was an excellent double-edged learning experience sword. I was very fortunate to have out-of-hospital birth experiences, critically imprinted first. And that wisdom never wavered throughout my career. I then, after moving to North Carolina, had one more baby boy, myself, Hayden. I was having a home birth and I hoped I wouldn't go into labor while I was at work. Over the years, a home or birth center births as a guest, like my sister Gina and friends' babies are good juju.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what school did you attend and why did you choose that school?
Team Frontier.
Lots of them. Lots of them around here.
Absolutely. I graduated in 2001. I heard Kitty Ernst speak at a conference in the early 90s on the importance of increasing numbers of midwives and educating them with out-of-hospital experience. And many midwives may know that Kitty is a 1950s Frontier Nursing Service midwife. She was a leader in midwifery education, establishing birth centers, and founder of the first distance learning program that began as Frontier in 1990. And when I saw her speak, her enthusiasm, it was dazzling and enchanting. And her dedication was the charm. She just retired at 95. Very wow. Recent. Yeah. After serving Frontier for 70 years. She's definitely a podcast herself.
If I can get her.
Oh, yeah. My other choice was Eastern Carolina University, which was a very good program, but it was 2 hours away and it hadn't become distance learning until 2003. So ECU would have been cost effective, but I was working full time and had children in school. So temporarily moving for a 2-year program wasn't a feasible option. So I chose Frontier. It had stellar recommendations and independent distance learning would work well. I could fit in my schoolwork around the family and job responsibilities with very limited classroom and travel time. As a Frontier graduate, I wanted to say a few words about the founder, Mary Breckenridge. She modeled the first American nurse midwives on European and Commonwealth practices, which was pre-NHS by 25 years plus, and reduced infant and maternal mortality in rural Appalachia beginning in the 1920s. Historically, before FNS, there were skilled granny, traditional, and Black midwives for centuries, improving outcomes for poor and rural women, especially in the South, when hospitals were not accessible to those families due to racial discrimination, limited financial and transportation resources. So sadly, in addition to her hard work and many years of dedication, Mary Breckinridge encouraged further prejudice by denouncing the Black traditional granny midwives, harming their reputation with racial bias, compounding and worsening existing cultural oppression. Frontier has acknowledged Mary Breckinridge's contributions as the founder of Frontier Nursing Service, as a pioneer in public health and nurse midwifery education, while denouncing her discriminatory beliefs and actions that were part of the university's beginnings, with a plan to move forward with reform to become a truly inclusive university. That's another podcast as well.
Yeah, it is. But thank you for addressing that. That was important to say. Thank you.
Yes.
So back then, we are all familiar with Frontier's setup now, I think. But how did they do that at that time?
Right. Full-time students did the didactic first, then the clinicals. I think we went to Hyden, Kentucky, three or four times during the program then. It's less frequent now. Frontier students find their own preceptors and clinical sites, usually in their communities. I believe that's still the way it is. That can be a plus or a minus, as sometimes clinical sites are difficult to find and sometimes they're not. For myself, it was about 1 to 2 hours each way for clinicals. And I usually stayed a day or two at a time, going between office, birth center, hospital. My clinicals were in the freestanding Carolina Birth Center in High Point, the High Point Medical Center, which was right across the street, the Scotland Memorial Hospital in Laurinburg, and that served a large Native American Lumbee population. And certainly my preceptors were very supportive and very kind.
So you mentioned that you had already mentioned a little bit that you worked, but talk a little bit more about how that you worked full-time during school and how you managed that.
Right, Amber. I worked full-time labor and delivery during BSN and CNM school. And I did save up a few weeks of paid vacation time for the last bit of midwifery school clinicals. I worked mostly 3/12s nights. I also worked on labor and delivery for an additional couple of months while taking boards and awaiting the results in those days. Not everyone agrees at all, but I can't stress how helpful labor and delivery experience is prior to midwifery school, especially with a distance learning program. There is so much you will have already learned, and it makes quick work of midwifery school. And it's also an easier transition, and the responsibility is much less overwhelming when you know the normal.
Well said. I think you mentioned a little bit about your age when you started nursing school, but how old were you when you started midwifery school? How did you balance that life with kids, family, and how old were they when you went through?
I was 40 with my three sons. They were 17, 13, and 5 when I started midwifery school. When I began nursing school at 30, my then youngest was in kindergarten, and my third child was born before the BSN. With midwifery school, my then youngest was in kindergarten, and I did my best to maximize time with the kids at home. You know, we all know as midwives, you never get it back with your own. I remember our CNM instructors telling us that while we were in school, we would miss out on family time due to the studies. And I did not agree. I got schoolwork done when the kids were in school, after they were in bed or on an occasional quiet shift at the hospital when the babies allowed.
And how did you finance school?
I had an early childhood degree prior, so I had a few less classes to take and prerequisites once I began nursing school. The RN was at a community college, very low cost, the BSN at North Carolina Central University. The hospital where I was employed had tuition reimbursement for that, and I also got a scholarship through the school. CNM school, I had student loans, and I paid them off when I sold my house 15 years later. I just saw my student loans as an investment in the future.
Yeah, I agree with that, depending on how you use them.
Right, that's right. That's right.
How long after graduation did it take you to pass boards?
In the early 2000s, boards were twice a year. I know that's very different now. I graduated in May and took my final comprehensive test on September 11th, 2001.
Wow.
The morning of the terrorist attack. It hasn't been a harbinger, though. I had to rush through the proctored exam because I'm in a public building, a health department that was evacuated. Boards were in October 2001 at Frontier in Hyden.
Okay. And did you pass the first time?
I did.
And how did you prepare? What did you study? What did you use to study?
Mostly my notes, lots of erasable pens and highlighters, and a test review book.
Okay. How long did it take you to get your license back then, your state license?
In those snail days, I think it was about 6 to 8 weeks until my license came in the mail. I know my nursing license took about 12 weeks to arrive.
Mm, that's a long wait.
Mm-hmm.
So after graduation, how long till you had your first job and how did you find that?
I was hired for my first midwifery job while I was still in school by Maureen Darcy, that I'd mentioned her prior, at the Women's Birth and Wellness Center. It was a nonprofit freestanding birth center in Chapel Hill. I had worked for Maureen prior at the Chatham Hospital Birth Center as a birth assistant while I was in nursing school.
Okay. So I know you're retired now, but what did your practice look like the model of care, patient load, schedule, when you were working?
For about 14 years from 2002 till 2016, I worked in a well-established multi-specialty private clinic, which we provided full scope midwifery in Burlington, North Carolina. We usually had 2 to 3 midwives, 2 to 3 OBs. That number changed occasionally. There was one midwife a few years before myself, so there were less nascent growing pains and communication was already in place. Our practice provided care at a level 2 trauma center hospital with our office in a connected building, but a separate business. This was the same hospital where I worked as a nurse for 10 years while in school. In choosing where to work as an RN and a CNM, I would only consider positions that cared for all populations. Although our OB provider's office lacked diversity on every level, unfortunately, our patient population did not. That was a battle and a struggle for me until the provider mix improved years later, just as I retired. The hospital had a diverse nursing staff and served a diverse demographic, including privately insured, Medicaid, Medicare, multiple public health departments, growing documented and undocumented Latinx population, and unassigned patients as well. The hospital had about 175, 200 births per month, which changed throughout the years, with our practice delivering about half of those babies, about 15 to 20 babies each provider per month. The office schedule was 6-24 hour on-call shifts per month, including 1-3-24-72 hour call shift weekend with 3 weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. Overlapping with 4 8-hour office and on-call time. as in we were also, we also saw a few patients in the office when we were on call. In the office, we saw 15 to 20 patients per non-call day and 8 to 10 patients per call day. We also first assisted for C-sections and cared for mother-baby postpartum unit. Midwives were responsible for 64 hours per week, combined office and call time. The MDs had their own primary call shifts, plus backing us up on our shifts. It was a demanding schedule, and taking time off if you were sick or on vacation was frequently frowned upon for the providers. All providers were held to the same standards. The clinic covered our malpractice insurance and tail coverage, RN, CNM, DEA, professional licenses, cell phone, partial reimbursement, vacation, PTO, CEU, allowance, organization fees, ACNM, MANA, and offered healthcare 401k. Due to the L&D proximity, providers could run back and forth to the office as necessary. It was a busy schedule most of the time, and it was a mutually beneficial arrangement. It was respectful and trusting milieu between the midwives, our model of practice, and the physician colleagues, OB, peds, anesthesia, MFM, nursing staff, and their model of practice. The midwife autonomously cared for every patient who presented to labor and delivery, only calling the backup for consultation or collaborative care. It was very rare to have transfer to MD care only. The midwife provided care admission until discharge. Many patients requested the midwife, but there were no specific midwife or MD patients, only shared. Can't argue with a successfully complementary team. We needed their expertise and surgical skills, and we made our OBGYN coworkers look good in so many areas, especially when you combined our statistics. The hospital's C-section rate for all providers was about 30 to 35%. One of my biggest goals in improving women's healthcare was preventing unnecessary primary C-sections. My primary rate was about 8% with about the same patient population with a high VBAC rate. I worked for years with a Scottish OB who said, "We're making obstetric cripples out of healthy women with unnecessary C-sections." Not that women are not very strong and don't have successful VBACs, but why should they have to face an unnecessary hurdle? Motherhood is hard enough any way you deliver. Do what it takes to get that primate delivered safely and vaginally. And we, as midwives, have a myriad of safe, savvy tricks.
Good. So if you change jobs in your career, tell me why.
The year after graduation, I became a single parent. I had two children at home. My older son was living on his own and in college. And the birth center where I was working was and is a wonderful place to have a baby, but the call schedule was not compatible with my family responsibilities in 2002. Nature gives many unpredictable curveballs with birth, and I at least needed a schedule that my family and I could live with. I also knew that unless the birth center or the home birth staff is large, which is unlikely, a hospital-based practice usually offers a less demanding schedule or more predictable. So I handed in my resignation, and a couple of days later, serendipitously, a physician I had worked with prior as a labor and delivery nurse asked me to come on board with their practice. He left a message on my answering machine saying I took good care of his patients as a nurse and I would be an asset to their practice as a midwife. That same practice had offered to pay for my CNM education if I agreed to work for them for a few years post-graduation. Being independent and wanting to keep my options open, I declined and then ended up working with them for 15 years and paying off my student loan myself.
Dang.
Yeah. Lesson learned. But the two-year break between different roles at the same hospital was important. You can't clock out as a nurse one day and turn up as a midwife the next day, even though you get a better parking space.
Yeah, that's probably hard.
Yeah.
So when you were working, how did you manage, especially as a single mom, how did you manage work-life balance?
On little sleep, mostly. It's another common theme, yeah. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. In the early home and birth center days, I brought my nursing babies along, and the families knew to have an extra pair of hands to help. And as my boys got older, they were very proud and respectful of my work. When we had to move fast, they'd say, "Hail, baby," or "Here comes one of yours, mom, that baby's smiling right at you." And then the parents would come in for a hug. They always knew it was my babies. And gratefully, we had a very understanding and supportive tribe. I was a single parent for all of my 15 years of practice. My family was very positive and grateful for my career and its benefits. My middle child immensely helped with the younger one. And shenanigans and escapades did seem to happen when mom was on call. It's amusing now. It wasn't so funny then.
No.
They laugh about it now, even more than I do. My boys have always made me proud. They're very successful, resourceful, and independent. And so many kids of midwives are just that. And we all know the irony of helping other families at the possible expense of our own. But most jobs for any parent in any field that provide for our families can require time away from them. Living 30 minutes from the hospital, I took call from the hospital. If there's any downtime, I'd catch up on the perpetual charting at the office. So I could leave earlier as well during the office days.
So obviously you're retired now, but yes. The last time you worked, your current state of practice, your salary that you had, and then what could a new grad coming in, do you know where you work, what they might expect to get paid?
I think my starting salary in North Carolina in 2003 was $65,000 to $70,000. And by retirement, 15 years later, it was about $124,000. Mm-hmm. For new grads considering private practice, it's very important to carefully discuss the schedule you're hired for initially, if I can offer advice, and that it does not change or morph into more call time or busier office schedules. Unless it's been agreed upon prior and not assumed that the CNMs will pick up the other provider's shifts until replacement occurs. If the practice is down a provider or two or three, the MDs pick up the extra call shifts unless the midwife chooses to, and the salary is compensated for the increased workload, even temporarily. Even with no changes in staffing, regular raises after productivity and patient satisfaction reviews are essential. We had the option of a base salary with either a raise or productivity bonus to choose from.
And you bring up a great point to discuss when looking at a job, is that who's going to fill that time if there's a gap in provider, you know,
right.
If it's the midwife, right. They get paid extra. Yeah. So I think some people may not think about that. That's a good point.
Right. I did not think of that before.
So we got to take our lessons from those who've suffered before, right?
That's right. The good and the bad.
Yes. So after all those years of practicing, why would you say, at least at the time you finish, what makes you a midwife now? Because this differs sometimes from why you started midwifery.
I retired 5 years ago at 55 in 2016. I was kind of attending a midwifery conference in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, hiking in Yellowstone, where I met my new partner. And we had a long distance relationship and got married 1 year later. We wanted to travel for long periods, spend more time with the family, our two new granddaughters, hike and garden and volunteer in the community. My youngest child had graduated from college that year. My husband had stopped working years ago, so retirement it was. I do miss the intimate relationship. It is like no other. And I think only midwives understand that. Mm-hmm. caring for women every year and seeing pictures of our babies and hearing about them growing up is very rewarding. Although it's a challenging lifestyle, it was an honor and a joy, and it didn't ever feel like a job to me. I also really miss doing my best to speak Spanish with patients. I don't miss quality time spent with the computer. And retirement is lovely, and sleeping at night is still not overrated.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. You deserve it.
Thank you.
So on your journey to midwifery and as a midwife, did you ever feel like quitting? And if so, what kept you going?
It was a continual learning arc. I didn't ever feel like quitting, but I had to learn to welcome criticism as growth in being part of a team with objectives that weren't always aligned with my own. And I know that's a struggle for many midwives, and probably always will be. Not technically in the patient care sense, as we didn't have problems with differing practice styles, but with office business plans, decisions, et cetera. Any career with as huge an impact as midwifery does will have the occasional downsides, professional and personal.
Yeah. And how did you deal with any feelings of burnout or trauma in your time?
I just assumed that the busyness bordered on burnout because it was inherent in the nature of birth. And I learned that commitment early on. It's a demanding career, but I did feel very supportive and appreciated by the women and their families, making it so worthwhile. I used to say that even on a stressful day, I could go into the room with a patient, close the door, and solace reigned. I was hers and she was mine. And it was a relationship like no other, kind of like breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. Today's midwives are much more cognizant of achieving a doable work-life balance. And that's very impressive, given the seductive nature of our work. It's physically demanding while caring for a needy population with an emotional investment.
Yeah, I agree. It feels like midwives today are more aware of and advocate for themselves to have that balance. And we've Absolutely. Learned that from you all and said, we can't do that. They said, it's too much.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's too much to ask. It is.
Yeah. So what quality do you possess that has helped, that you may feel has made you successful?
There are many different types of sister Sash Femmes all over the world, but I think that we all share the same qualities. We all have chutzpah, all have moxie, ardor, and few midwives are shrinking violets. We are a stalwart tribe.
I like that. That was beautiful. Do you have any recommendations for aspiring midwives?
I think learning to speak Spanish or any other language is invaluable in healthcare. The best resources for learning to speak Spanish were the interpreters at the office, the hospital, and the Spanish-speaking patients themselves. They were super kind with me. Lots of laughs, mostly at my expense. I know years ago I used Polyglot, which is a medical translation app from Duke Global Health Institute. I'm sure there are many new versions now.
Yes, probably, but that's helpful. Do you have anything you're particularly passionate about that you'd like to talk about?
I'd like to suggest to fellow retired midwives, recruiting and mentoring students through school and the first years of practice. Reach out by texting, phone calls, meeting up, hosting meetings with peers of all stages to have social time for in-person inspiration. I was very fortunate to have an incredible role model, paragon, Colleen Gutierrez, for 25 years while I was a labor and delivery nurse and while I was a midwife. She was an Air Force midwife, sublime skills, compassionate with a humble heart, all at the same time. we each have so much beneficence to offer by midwifing the new midwife. The number of new midwives of every race and ethnicity needs to grow exponentially, especially the midwives of color. America is the only high resource country in the world with a worsening maternal mortality rate. With our guidance and support, we can remove barriers to diversify our profession and increase inclusivity to reflect the varied demographics of the US. Of the approximately 15,000 midwives in the US, 90% identify as white, 6% as Black, 4% as Latinx, 1-2% Indigenous, Asian, Pacific Islander, Indian. Black women and their babies have the worst childbearing outcomes of any racial ethnic cohort. This proportion is due to racism, not race. And it directly correlates with the low number of midwives and providers of color. While we can't make another provider walk faster when a patient of color needs them, we can quicken our own pace and hand that standard of integrity down. During our careers, student time is frequently rushed for all of us. Focus time with an experienced midwife who's not their instructor or a coworker incomparably contributes towards solidarity and sustainability of the next generation of midwives. It takes a midwife to understand the realm, assuage the hard parts with advice, and give pearls of confidence, adding to their competence. And our grandchildren will all need midwives someday.
Oh, that was very, very well said. Thank you. It sounds Thank like you. Colleen was an excellent mentor for you. I hope that she can hear your story.
I'll have to tell her.
Yes.
She just retired.
Oh, good.
A few weeks.
Maybe she'll come on here with me too.
Good idea.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Angela.
Great.
Thanks for coming on. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, thank you for doing the podcast. I love hearing other midwife stories.
And I am honored, as I said offline, that you, after all these years of practice, still come on and listen to all these stories of young midwives.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Journey to Midwifery fans, that's a wrap for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I have a long list of midwives on my waiting list that I plan to schedule for interviews. So the next one is a couple weeks out. Bear with me. And as I said in the beginning, I will do my best to get them out to you as fast as I can. You know where to find me. Email at journeytomidwiferypodcast@gmail.com and Instagram and Facebook at journeytomidwiferypodcast. Until next time.